Hello, it's great to have you with me. I'm Kim Clyden, former ABC radio presenter and children's book author, creating a community of people who care about children. How do we nurture creative, connected, resilient, emotionally intelligent, and empowered children? And they say it takes a village. So if you're feeling overwhelmed by the responsibility, you're not alone. We're surrounded, though, by people who can support us, your family, friends, and professionals, who all play an influential role in shaping our children. Imagine if your parents, teachers, relatives, or carers told you another story. Your life story would be completely different. I believe we can change the narrative for our children, but to do that, we need to change our story. Over the previous episodes, there's been a clear and repeated message about identity and how what we do tends to define us at different points in our lives. The emotional and psychological toll varies, as do the recovery methods available. What works for you may not work for someone else, and it's modelling vulnerability for our children that allows them to ask for help. The self-help industry is globally estimated to be worth billions of dollars annually. Whilst it offers potential benefits, the industry remains unregulated and often lacks any evidence base. Former rugby league pro athlete Trent Merrin is using his personal experience with science-based cold therapy to help others. Teaming up with founder of the Paragon Group, Andy Fanthapanya, and TechWiz, Jet Ferro, who manages business operations for the group, they're building relationships with communities and their leaders to deliver improved outcomes and access for people living outside big cities. It's wonderful to have you all in the studio. Andy, you told me earlier that through the course of conducting business in regional Australia, you'd identified a distinct lack of acknowledgement and support from business and government agencies. You actually function in a global space. So how dissimilar is it in regional areas here as to anywhere else in the world?
It's the same everywhere. Regional areas are major contributors to the country's economy in so many different ways, from, you know, food through to industry through to mining, and it always gets neglected because it's not a big consumerism environment that gets the attention. So that's very unfortunate, but as established businesses and also being exposed to different community levels, it's been a real blessing to be able to see, I guess, different dynamics within different countries, but there's a common denominator, and that common denominator is regional areas always are on the back burner.
What did you notice with some of the services or facilities predominantly across the board?
Well, it comes with infrastructure, right? And once again, the common ground that we have in multiple areas around the world in Australia is that infrastructure is focused on metro areas first, and then it slowly starts to move out to, you know, the country and regional areas. Unfortunately, societal challenges and needs move a lot faster than the infrastructure can reach. And so governments can do the best they can, but I think it takes community leaders and community businesses to come together to want to make that change, so that we can speed up some of the areas of progress that's really needed. And some of them don't really need a lot of money, it's more attention.
Where do you think we should be investing for the future?
That's a really good question. And I think the key areas is really the shift of mindset. You know, the generations that we have right now is, I grew up in a time where we came here as refugees to Australia, and so we've experienced all sorts of changes in our environment, and you know, it's been beautiful to actually see Australia really morph into something that is accepting, multicultural, and very, very advanced. And I'm starting to see that in the whole region, in different countries as well. But the one thing that is common with this whole generation of change is that we're fixated on technology that has driven the change. A part of that is we don't get to experience our environments the way we used to. And connection with our environment is connection with our people. And without that, we just, you know, we lack the ability to make community change. And so to answer your question, it's got to be around community environment, community connection, and that whole community drive to do something for the new generation that is up and coming, for them to understand and for them to learn. And we spoke about, you know, at some points where we connected, we spoke about resilience, and that's probably one of the key areas, because the resilience isn't just, you know, psychological experience, resilience. It's resilience in every facet that you start to focus on. So that's probably where I would look at. It's less money to do that, but it's higher impact.
One of the things we first connected over in relation to values was on that community basis, but also future generations. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that you were trying to get a lot of philanthropic work, you know, into association with your business. So how's that developed in the last couple of years, and what are you currently investing in?
Do you know, that has taken us a very, very long time to get cut through with the community, because As you come through and start to discuss it with community, you engage with you know, the different key stakeholder groups, and they've got their pathways already. And so for people like us that want to help make a change, we've got to understand that first, right? And we've got to understand where the shortfalls are and the shortcomings are, and it's not for anything but a lack of resource that's available to community and area. And so our job and our role is to look at how we can help fulfill those key deficits that will make the maximum impact. It's taken us pretty much 18 months to 2 years to have that understanding. I mean, when I first came into regional Mackay, I was effectively thinking, well, we can make a change pretty quickly, you know, because here are the key areas and here's what I can see on a macro space, and then I drill down and look at it from a micro space, and then, you know, you do all the usual economic drivers, and that's just not how it works. There are people in community that want, for example, when we spoke about sport, they want for their children to play sport, but they can't even afford transport, let alone get to practice, and yet the child is talented. So how do you connect that? And that impact of an individual being able to connect with sport and community will have major changes in their life and major impacts. And if that can impact one individual, it will impact the community that individual is exposed to. So that's now the understanding. And so the work that we have right now is more focused on delivering human-centric impact rather than simply just looking at investment.
Where have you found the inspiration to focus on sport as a community initiative?
Well, that's really come from, a lot of the people that I've actually met up with and seen how, you know, they've been able to achieve, once again, certain levels of success, personal success, right? And their personal success has really driven, you know, a really good community success around them. And so that's been the main driver. I mean, people like Trent, where I've, you know, caught up with, met and gotten to know, and it's just been incredible just to hear his journey and his experience and what he's doing with his ability to make change in terms of inspiring people and also helping build resilience in mental health. It's about adopting the experience that he has and then applying it to once again, an age group and a sector and a community space. So it's I'm inspired by people that are around me.
It's beautiful to hear Andy speak like that too, because it's funny what the universe does. Without knowing, we ask for each other, and the same with Jet as well. We all bring unique talents and skills and life experience to creating an empire together for the benefit of others.
I love that word, empire.
It is. It's we can see it now. Like, the more time we spend together, We all have the same vision, the same values and same morals. I founded Freeze Yourself through tough times. I retired from professional rugby league and I was in a space where I didn't know what my identity was and what the next chapter of my life was. I was going through a separation at the time too. So around me, the walls were caving in and the only tool that I had was an ice bath. I knew what was coming my way because you hear stories of people that have gone through those sort of experiences. So I had an understanding of what I was facing. Going off my life experience, which is built on resilience, I knew I had to condition myself every single day for the tough times that were going to come. So I had to be honestly brutal with myself. And there's nothing more besides doing marathons and running into 130 kilo humans. There's nothing else that's going to challenge you than 3 degree water. So my body wasn't built for that anymore. So it was the water that I had to choose my poison. And I implemented that in my daily routine for a while until I realized that everyone should have access to the power of cold therapy instead of the normal medications that everyone goes to. You could have access to something that doesn't cost you a thing and the benefits of it are incredible. So I thought, all right, let's put this on a scaled level, and everyone has access to their phones. So I love tech. And that's why I love these two so much, because they blow my mind every time I talk to them with how they can do things. I had an idea of being able to put ice bars everywhere and people having access to them through an application. Whether you're traveling around Australia, no matter where our bath is, you can find it on our app and then you can walk up to it and have access to recovery and a mental health tool. I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to develop an app. I don't know how to build a website. I don't know anything like that. I don't even know how to start a business at the time. And then this is where these two geniuses and the other people that are involved in the business, it's like law of attraction. I asked for it, and the right people with the right mindset, with the right values and morals, we drew that energy together, and now we're here trying to, well, we will conquer the world with what we're building together.
That's really powerful. I'm wondering what was going on in your life at the time that you were mentally challenged.
Yeah, I was going through a separation. I had the criminal law weaponized against me, and I also was going through the family courts, and still am. And it was a reality check on what is real and what isn't. I think I had a very successful footy image. And when you go through tough times, that side of the fence isn't real. It's not normal. It's made out to be something that it isn't, and it's temporarily. It's not. It doesn't last forever. And I learned that real quick. And going back to what Andy was saying too about the community and whatnot, it's a bit of the Benjamin Button analogy, I like to call it, is when you're young, you need community to help you grow and shape you into what you want to become, and your values and morals, that all stems from your surroundings. I think as we get older, we lose track of our inner child and our surroundings and the community, and we individualize things, especially with technology now. It's all about entitlement and how you look, gratification and how you look. And it's not until you get to a stage where you've learned some very hard truths and very hard lessons where you want to grow young again and live from the inner child and stem back to your community. And like I know from my life experience as a kid playing in backyard footy and the local footy fields and the local community, and that was fun. Everyone was around it. It was a family vibe. And to be able to come back to these areas and feel that connection again, it takes you back to the inner child, and you want to hold on to it and you want to serve it. And I think when you come from an act of service, that is what happiness is. When you've seen other people succeed and other people grow and be better, it takes the ego away and you live from the inner child, and everyone's happy, and everyone, you can feel it.
It's like a fulfillment.
It's a fulfillment.
Yeah.
So to be able to create a business with like-minded people and the vision that we all have together, and it's not coming from the ego or being selfish. It's an act of service. It's not work. It's a passion.
So how did leaving the professional football league affect you personally? Because I know leaving media, you know, I had this identity attachment to who I was, which it wasn't who I was, it was what I did.
To be honest, I never really lived from my ego. I've always been in tune with who I am as a person. It was more what come with what I did as a professional, and the fakeness and the people that were there for the wrong reasons, and they weren't genuinely there for me as a person. I always knew who I was, but a lot of people and the people that I was within that circle weren't in it for me. They were in it for what comes with that. And when your whole family and your life gets stripped away when you finished it, or you've worked hard to that point to set yourself up for your family and for the future of your family, you have to have a really good look at yourself and go, okay, well, do I actually know who I am? Because if I did, I wouldn't have allowed all these people and I wouldn't have built this life for other people when it wasn't really built for me. And it works both ways. Some people live in the ego, so when they don't have the cameras in their face, they feel left out, where it was the opposite for me. I retired to get away from it all. I didn't want to live in that space anymore. I did enough. Like, I wanted to go away in solitude and live from the fruits of what I created. And then it was taken away from me. So it's been the most humbling, brutal experience of my life. But I'd do it over and over and over again because of the lessons it's taught me, and it's allowed me to live from the inner child. It's allowed me to be aware and conscious of my surroundings and who I place myself around, because everyone you surround yourself with is who you are. So it's made me very conscious and aware of who I surround myself with and who I want to build a future with now, because I want to keep that future. I don't want to give it away.
Why did you feel like you wanted to share, you know, the benefits of what you'd experienced and the leveling of the mental health issues with other people who were struggling?
It'd be selfish if I didn't. I think having an understanding, I look back at it now and I built my whole life around resilience. I think as a childhood, I was from a low economic background. Family had to work hard for what they had. And I started road running and training, and I was a big boy, so I was always faced with adversity and challenges, and I only overcome those things by resilience and tough times and by training and not listening to certain people and doing the opposite. And it takes, you've got to be fearless to be able to do that, to go against what people are saying because they want you to be in their comfort zone, but you've got to be uncomfortable to go and listen to yourself. So and that Benjamin Button theory is, as a kid, I learned how to be resilient in so many ways of my life. And as an adult, I think the stigma around mental health, I push back on it a lot now in the sense of medications and psychologists and all these experts. Don't get me wrong, they're probably an expert in what they've studied for a long time, but I think the best medication and best antidote to mental health is being in healthy, uncomfortable situations, because the more we can be, when we're always going to be faced with uncomfortable situations, we're always going to be faced with challenges, no matter what, no matter what pills you take, no matter what situations you move away from, there's a bad day going to happen. That's promised to us. We're all dying every single day. So we're promised a bad situation. And if we can condition ourselves with a tool for being uncomfortable every single day, which I use cold plunging, so 3 degrees every morning, first thing I do is jump in it because I don't want to do it. So if we can condition ourselves and our nervous system to be conditioned in fight or flight every single morning, then no matter what comes at us that day, you've already prepared yourself for something.
They say that you can't control anything outside of you, right? You can't control how people treat you. You can't control what happens in the external world. The only thing we control is how we respond or react to any situation.
I love the responding and reacting. And I've done a lot of homework on that with my life experience, and I used to react. A lot of the inner child, a lot of, yeah, we all, and it's training, it's conditioning. We need to condition ourselves and train ourselves.
It's reprogramming, isn't
it? It's reprogramming.
Like taking the old program and substituting it with something else.
But it's also being aware of what we just said. A lot of people don't know what responding is. You know, the difference between reacting and responding. What is that? I know if I talked to my mates 10 years ago, they tell me to shut up. Like, it's hoodoo. What are you talking about? No. Reacting and responding. You just sit with the shit. Be uncomfortable for a bit. Because our fight or flight, we want to react. You want to feel it. It's all...
That's because we don't want to feel.
That's what exactly right.
So when we react, it's because we're in a situation where we don't want to feel that sadness, that, you know, usually a negative emotion. You know, even anger comes out of a place of fear of being confronted with something.
It's a protective mechanism.
It is, definitely is.
So we can either be a victim of our life experience, or we can choose what our next step is. We're all promised the same things. So you can either live from your pain, or you can learn from it and turn it into an empire, which is what we're doing.
Jet, you've been very quiet through this conversation. How did you become involved in tech with Trent and Andy?
It started 10 years ago in the majestical realm of blockchain. I was 14 years old playing a renowned game called Minecraft. And one of the biggest things when I talk to people, including my little brother who's 15, is you want to surround yourself by, you know, outside of like-minded people, things that are always picking at your brain. And so when you have the ability to play a game like Minecraft that most people don't understand, it's all about puzzles. And so playing a simple game taught me how to be an entrepreneur at a very, very young age. And that led me to start my own business, which was a Minecraft server. And people would want to purchase things from me that I realized, well, I could press a few buttons and give them some diamonds. And in return, they'll send money to my mom's PayPal account. And that led to that PayPal account getting maxed out. And a 14-year-old cannot do that legally. And so I researched the realm of cryptocurrency, as it was a peer-to-peer transaction that I didn't need any bank or any other individual to approve on besides the individual and myself. And so that led me to figure out, okay, well, I can accept it. Now, how do I get rid of it and turn it into cash? And so it really started my own internal journey at a young age on how to problem solve and how to research and how to solve problems that I'm personally facing. And that led to a magical journey of wherever I went around the world. If that's playing football, soccer, to clarify, it's painful to say soccer, but it's football. And wherever I was around the world, I was able to, you know, chase a professional career while it's still, you know, staying on top of technology. And I had the personal realization over in Europe, in Malaga, Spain, that as good as I am, I'm not the best. And it was the harsh realization that I love playing, but I'm going to start enjoying it. And that means stepping down from the ultimate pressure of performance and start to enjoy it again, which ultimately resonates to what Trent said in the beginning of your surrounding community and playing with people around you. If it's dads watching you while, you know, drinking Tui's New or, you know, whatever it is, it's about the socialization aspect of it that you forget. Yeah, I got back from Europe overseas and I decided to start my own business because I was possibly the youngest blockchain guy out here in Australia. And there was lots of people coming to me. And so it was started off with consultation, with advice, and then development and full-blown services. And so I dropped out of university. I was studying financial advising, something, you know, dad was, of course, a bit worried on. But, you know, the support of the people around you is the most important thing. And so that led me to be introduced to Andy. And Andy was originally a client of mine where I had built him a platform. And after, I'd say, about a year of going back and forth of him, moved to Adelaide as I was based in North Sydney, an American, very social guy. It was
it took a lot of convincing.
And so I was in a five-year relationship at that stage, had a healthy business, and my partner and I had broken up, and I'm all about taking risk, as it's something that I've been taught by my dad and other adults around me, that you're young, so take the risk. And it ultimately led to easily the best decision of my life. And it's been about 2.5 upcoming 3 years with the Paragon Group. And overall, I wouldn't want to be anywhere else. What we're building is so unique. It's very scary to be a youthful kid. I say kid, being 25, but I'm surrounded by people that, you know, like Andy and like Trent, that business is scary. And so you need to choose the right people in life. And if you surround yourself by like-minded individuals, no matter of the age, you synergize and that energy bounces off each other. And so it's been possibly the fastest 3 years of my life. It feels like a few blinks. That being said, we've accomplished so much in such a little time that I would have never realized I would be in a podcast room in Mackay. And funnily enough, to all tie back to the, you know, original conversation around community and Mackay and how Andy mentioned to me something earlier, I'd never heard of Mackay before. And I've heard of regional areas, but I never had the understanding of the impact to the economy. I'm based from Sydney and from Melbourne, where we are a consuming economy. We're going to the Myers. We're going to the $20 million renovated, you know, Westfields, where everything is consumption. And that consumption has to, you know, originate from somewhere. I couldn't tell you last time I drove past farms and sugarcane growing and people laughing and, you know, community event here in the morning where we got to meet people. It's absolutely refreshing. And so the stars aligned, you know, and the energy's brought us together, and it's been a fantastic journey so far, and it's just getting started, which is the most important thing.
I'm really intrigued by your journey through tech, and because so many people are actually afraid of it. From your perspective, as someone who embraced it from an early age and knows it back to front, how should we be adopting or embracing technology?
The most overseen thing of technology, which I realized from my mom getting freaked out that her phone talks to her being Siri, is the fact of self-education. People are scared because they're not educated. And we have technology has provided a resource of free education. If that's YouTube, if that's Wikipedia, whatever resource it is, the best, you know, phrase is when there's a will, there's a way. And so technology is the enabler of so many things. And I think evolution, you know, is crazy to think about. But in the technology space, it's evolving at such a rapid pace that all it takes is a Google, one Google search away from you actually understanding something. And technology enables that. Don't be scared. You have to learn how to embrace it. But it's about embracing it in a healthy way.
How do you think we should then be approaching teaching our children about technology? Because they've been exposed to a lot of things we didn't really understand the social ramifications of. So from your perspective, how should we approach that with the next generation in relation to what they are exposed to at whatever age?
It's an interesting question. I think I don't have any kids, but I have a brother who's 10 years younger than me. That age gap allows me to be a brother, but also to be kind of a mentor to him. It's not necessarily curriculum that's defined by an education system and that whole side, but it's the self-intuition of teaching your kids that this is what to do when you have questions, and it's a safe space to talk. It's a safe space to ask. And when you want to do something, you have the resources to do it yourself. And so I think it's enabling them with the right tools to teach them. Well, YouTube is great to watch video games. It's great to watch your favorite, you know, Fortnite streamer. But it's also fantastic to ask, what is X, Y, and Z? You know, and so there's so many open source resources that I think parents and people need to embrace that education, you don't have to pay for it. It's free. And it's just about having that will to find how to do it and how to do it in a safe way, which is evidently the most important thing, is how to do it safely.
Andy, coming back to you, how do we ensure into the future we have access to the right information and that we provide options for people who are looking for something innovative and new?
It's about bringing the right community together and putting that structure in place. I think it's very evident right now where you know the need is, right, or where the needs are. And it's up to us as a cohort to really identify who can come into the fold, who can do what role, and what technologies are needed at what stages. So it's almost like a definition process that we have to go through with community. And it is literally a case-by-case basis within the region, you know, because you have different pockets that have different needs. And a lot of it comes from, I guess... we would have lived experience in terms of exposures where we were able to pick out the key components of needs, and then from there we'd be able to bring about a cohort of solution delivery partners that can really assist. And that really is key right now. It's picking the right solution delivery partners based on the challenges that we have. We were talking about, mental health and things like challenges with people that are self-harming, children growing up in an era where resilience is something that, it was a part of our lived experience, right?
Yeah.
In some instances, you almost feel like they're robbed of that experience because they don't have the same access to what we had.
And they're so protected. Because of the nature of the dangers in our modern world, we tend to keep our kids close,
yeah,
and we tend to be more risk averse, which I'm not sure is doing them any favours. Why not encourage those children to take risks? They're going to need
loose,
to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Let them loose.
Let them loose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think from today what I've learned is collaboration is key to our future. And I'm really excited about the collaborations that are forming in this very room. All the best for your future endeavours. I can't wait to hear more, and maybe next time you're back we can focus on another conversation that will help the world be inspired and perhaps motivated to change.
Love it.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us. Yeah.
Founder of the Paragon Group, Andy Fanthapanya, founder of Freeze Yourself, Trent Merrin, and technology and business operations for the Paragon Group, Jet Farrow, speaking with me in the studio. If you'd like to discover more about the initiatives mentioned in this episode and connect with Andy, Trent, or Jet, all the links are in the show notes, where you'll also find details of my social media platforms and website address. Don't forget, you can subscribe at kimclyden.com and check out the colourful children's picture books that will help you have important conversations like this with the kids in your life. Thanks for listening, and remember, be the change you want to see in the world.